Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. We have a busy docket because I was gone for a couple of days. Let's get to it. First, a lot of news on Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow. Barry Morphew had a bunch of documents released, and, well, it's kind of leaving everybody looking in a bad light. The Ahmaud Arbery trial continues. Letitia Stauch has a trial date, but I'm not sure we're going to get there. Alec Murdoch is playing games. Kyle Rittenhouse, well, that trial's over in my humble opinion. The prosecutor just doesn't know it yet. Cuomo's case has been delayed for some technicalities. And then our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel, the channel where you have an actual practicing criminal defense attorney who's going to explain the facts, the procedures, and the law of cases that we are currently following. Thanks for watching. Now, if you haven't done so already, please hit that subscribe button. Hit that little bell so you receive notifications when we go live or put up new content. And as always, please leave me a comment below. And you can always remember and never forget that if you can't watch us, you can always listen to us by downloading Crime Talk with Scott Reich on all of your podcasting apps, which includes Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon, and Audible. So we are always there with you, and you can get this episode as well as all of our prior episodes as well. All right, we need to take care of the people that help take care of Crime Talk. We've got another promo code for you from my favorite USDA certified organic company that makes eating well, easy, and affordable with plans to fit every kind of lifestyle. Green Chef makes cooking easy for me and the lovely Miss Kristen with dinner options that work around our busy lifestyle. Recipes include pre-made measured sauces, dressings, and spices so that you can get more flavor in less time. Green Chef is a USDA certified organic company and offers dishes for a variety of lifestyles, keto, paleo, plant powered, or those who simply want a little more balance. Green Chef is perfect for weeknights when I want a home-cooked meal but don't have the time to do the heavy lifting of home cooking. Let Green Chef do the meal planning, grocery shopping, and most of the prep for you week after week. Go to greenchef.us and use code 125CRIMETALK to get $125 off plus free shipping on your first box. That's go to greenchef.us and use code 125CRIMETALK and get $125 off plus free shipping on your first box. All right, let's get to the docket. Today, Tuesday, November 9th. Okay, Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow. Well, who do we get to first today? Let's start with Chad Daybell. All right, Chad Daybell has filed a motion for discovery regarding the motion that Mark Means filed, basically alleging that the individuals that are responsible for restoring Lori Vallow back to competency, that they somehow put her in touch with the LDS Church, basically recommended that she get a new attorney. Well, apparently she did call the LDS Church because the LDS Church then contacted the prosecutor and was aware of the statements that were made, and somehow these statements didn't get produced to the defense. Well, now the prosecution is kind of looking a little silly. Let's face it, okay? You would think that in a restoration matter, the staff there would know that they should not be interacting with people that are now residents to engage in discussions of their legal matters other than what it relates to competency type issues. I can't imagine, though, that it was part of their homework, so I'm taking that with a bit of a grain of salt. Now, could a person who is basically functioning but completely delusional get a copy for the head attorneys at the LDS Church on their own? Probably. Okay? Either way, Mark Means has once again stirred up a hornet's nest, and I look forward to the response from the prosecution because, like I said, I take real anything that Mark Means puts in a motion with a bit of a grain of salt. Well, and John Pryor has actually been pretty good so far as it relates to not jumping on that bandwagon, but however he is in this particular case, and basically stating that, hey, when you have a death penalty case as the one here, there is a certain heightened level of due process, and you have to give the defendant a heightened due process. And so they want a record of all of the items that basically have taken place. And basically this may be Brady material. Certainly the prosecution has an obligation to go look into this allegation and make sure that anything has turned over to the defense. Why? Because it is a death penalty case. They should do it even if it wasn't a death penalty case. But these are side issues that create distractions and frankly make the prosecution look like they don't have their act together. You say, but hey, Scott, they're not the ones that were the ones who did this. They didn't order this. Even if you assume these allegations are true, just for the sake of argument, you say, well, the state didn't do anything. The prosecution didn't do anything. Well, guess what? The people that work for the state are government actors, and they can't go around asking people about their case, and they certainly can't go around giving legal advice. So I hope that's not the case, but what does it really change much of anything? I don't know. Apparently some statements were made. Be curious to see what statements were made by Lori Vallow and if they're incriminating or exculpatory, or if it's just of such a nature that Mark Means doesn't like that, you know, Lori Vallow thinks she needs someone other than a now court-appointed attorney. I can't imagine the LDS Church would pay for her counsel in any way, particularly when they're calling the prosecutor saying, hey, we talked to them. Now, the attorneys probably should not have talked to her at all from the LDS Church. The attorneys from the LDS Church probably should not have talked to Lori Vallow at all because they knew that she was represented. All right. I'm sure everybody at the LDS Church knows that she's represented. So that's an ethical issue that may have to take place there. But they did the right thing, but they shouldn't have talked to him. Hopefully the conversation was, you're represented. We can't talk with you. And, you know, I'm going to have to let the DA know what we did. So we've got that. Then, of course, there's some more discovery issues. And I frankly have to agree with Mr. Pryor in this particular matter is that where are the lab results? Okay. Apparently, specific requests have been made to the testing laboratory back in August. And a lot of this material has not been made available to the defense. Come on, state, you have an obligation to turn this stuff over. You have an obligation to get it tested so that the defense can review it, have their experts review it. Quit dragging your feet, which kind of goes to show this is what happens when you get a high-profile case in a smaller jurisdiction that's not used to a case with this much technical analysis that needs to take place. The prosecution is getting overwhelmed. It's a full-time job. They brought on another prosecutor to just work on this case themselves, and it's becoming time-consuming and expensive. Now, let's jump to Mark Means. Mark Means is filing motions going back to subpoenas that he served back in May of last year regarding Melanie Gibb. He's just now getting around to filing another motion for this. The case has been stayed, Mr. Means. It's not going to happen. Your request for out-of-state depositions for all of these people, it's not going to happen in regards to your case because the case has been stayed. The court is not going to take that action. Mr. Means, go talk to Mr. Archibald, an experienced attorney in the area of criminal defense, before you file this stuff. Nothing should go out from Mr. Means' office at all unless Mr. Archibald has reviewed it. Just my humble opinion. Now, I think because we call it the way we see it here, let's talk about the next motion from the prosecution in this case, okay? All right, just so we are equal opportunity, make sure that we're not, jumping on the bandwagon for the prosecution. I think we called it pretty squarely. The prosecution needs to get their act together on the Lori Vallow, Chad DeBell matter. Well, as you may recall, there was a hearing that was held back on September 30th, and there was a motion regarding a change of venue. Well, this change of venue motion had been set for
months, ladies and gentlemen. This is one of the first motions that John Pryor filed on behalf of his client, Chad Daybell. And this motion had been set for quite a while. It was a status conference. And the court said, we're going to hear this motion that's been out there for a long, long time. Well, basically, the prosecution showed up and said, hey, judge, we think that we should move the case. But, you know, let's just, we believe that we won't get a fair trial in the counties in which we reside. But let's just ship a jury in after we select them from, you know, like Ida County, up in Boise area, I guess. And the judge said, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to a different location. We're going to make sure that everybody gets a fair trial. Well, the prosecution wants to file or has filed a motion to allow additional evidence pursuant to the Idaho Code, sections 19-1816, regarding transporting a jury. Okay, the prosecution has made this argument. The judge denied the request. Okay? They're the prosecution is the one that's turned this into a death penalty case, and the prosecution is the one that obviously brought the charges. Bottom line is that the prosecution is stuck with footing the bill. Okay? And as a colonel told me once as a young prosecutor in the United States Marine Corps, there's always money for justice. Okay? They're going to find it. But this motion is nothing but a rehash of the arguments that they previously filed and said, well, judge, we really want to call a witness again to really, really explain this time as to why it's really, really expensive. And basically, this is going to hurt all of our budgets. And therefore, it's just more economical to transport the jury than to transfer all the entire pending actions to them. Well, I hope the judge, Judge Boyce in this case, denies this motion. The prosecution knew this motions hearing was coming. They should have been prepared for it instead of filing a last-minute motion saying, oh, just transport a new jury in here, okay? They knew when the motions hearing was. They didn't do it. They didn't get the answer they wanted, so what do? They file a motion to reconsider. Most judges do not file a motion to reconsider because they have usually put in some thought into the decision. They reviewed the facts and the law and applied the facts to the law and made their decision in that regard. The court recognized the financial hardships in this particular case. But for the prosecution to come back and say, well, judge, we really weren't prepared. And that's really what this motion is saying. Judge, we weren't prepared. Sorry. Please let us present some more information. No, I hope the judge denies it. Okay, if the defense attorney or private counsel didn't show up prepared for a motions hearing and say, judge, I just really didn't think that you were going to rule on it that day. I didn't know. You'd be contacting your malpractice carrier, or you'd be protecting yourself from a motion for ineffective assistance of counsel. But the prosecution shows up unprepared and they just say, well, we're just going to file a motion to reconsider before it gets really expensive. Guess what? It's coming out of their budgets. They have to find the money to do it. They charge the case. Justice is expensive, and there's always money for justice. So, prosecutors, get your act together because you're starting to look like you're in way over your head on this particular case. Next on the docket, the Barry Morphew matter. A Chaffee County judge has released the file in the Barry Morphew murder case regarding the disappearance of his wife, Suzanne. Now, the documents reveal some unfiltered back and forth on motions between the prosecution and the defense that date back to late spring. Now, back in May, when Morphew was arrested, the documents revealed that he did not want to take a polygraph, saying that it's inadmissible and unreliable in court. The defense didn't think that should be made public. The defense also claimed that the prosecution did not give them access to forensic images of Morphew's cell phone and recordings from a spy pen, which officials say belonged to Suzanne. The defense also says that the mountains of paperwork from the prosecution are hindering their preparation. These documents also detail a dispute over the DNA evidence found at Suzanne Morphew's car glove box, potentially linking an unknown male involved in three sexual assaults in two other states. The defense argued that the prosecution knew about this long before they informed the defense. That's a problem for the prosecution. Also included in the documents is a very long list of witnesses for the prosecution, which that's normal. It has to be turned over. They have to list anybody who was interviewed or had anything to do with his investigation as a potential witness. That's not surprising at all. Now, the list does include potentially hundreds of witnesses. And that list includes Macy and Mallory Morphew, the daughters of Suzanne and Barry. And in these new documents, the defense also argues that there was a rush to judgment to arrest Barry Morphew, especially since officials have not found Suzanne's body. A hearing is set today regarding this whole issue as to whether there were any violations regarding discovery. As we've talked about this many times before, the prosecution has to turn over evidence when they get it. They can't drag their feet, they can't delay, they can't hide it. They have to turn it over to the defense. If they don't do that, it could be a violation. The judge could do lots of things. First, he could say that the prosecution couldn't use that particular evidence, say, at trial. The other extreme would be that the court could dismiss the case. Very, very unlikely. That would be an extreme remedy. And then really the issue then becomes, what prejudice has it caused the defense? Does it delay their investigation? Okay, fine. Once again, the remedy has to be specifically tailored to any violations if the court finds there is some sort of intentional violation of Brady. Normally the remedy is the prosecution can't use the evidence that they think is going to be good for them. Of course, the defense will ask for dismissal, and that's simply not going to happen. Obviously, we'll bring you the latest on that hearing. All right, the Ahmaud Arbery trial. Now, there's a lot of big cases going on right now, and this is one of them that I think everyone really should be watching. Now, obviously, the three men charged with the killing of Ahmaud Arbery continues this week. The first police officer to respond to the shooting of Ahmaud Arbery near Brunswick, Georgia, testified in court that he did not render first aid to Arbery due to the dangerous situation, as well as apparently his lack of medical training and necessary equipment. The police officer, Ricky Minshaw, said when he arrived at the scene of the shooting back on February 23rd of 2020, his immediate focus was simply officer safety. Minshaw said he came upon the location of the shooting and said he saw two white men pacing while Arbery, a 25-year-old black man, was on the ground bleeding from his wounds. Minshaw testified that after seeing Arbery lying on the ground, he notified dispatch to send emergency medical personnel to the area, then worked on preserving the scene integrity for the investigators. What does preserving the scene integrity means? Make sure nobody touches anything, nobody walks through the area, basically putting up tape, all right? Well, the prosecutors asked how Arbery appeared at that time. Minshaw said he was face down, he looked unresponsive to his surroundings, and he appeared to be deceased. The prosecutor asked the officer if he performed CPR, to which he said no, stating he did not because I did not know any of the people or any of the facts or circumstances as to what happened, hence officer safety. Minshaw testified, being that I was the only officer in the scene without having any other police units to watch his back, there was no way he would have switched his attention to anything related to medical and still be able to watch his surroundings and watch after his own safety. Officer safety is always the fallback for anything when you don't do something. Remember that in a police investigation, ladies and gentlemen. Officer safety. Now, Minshew's body cam footage was shown to the jury by the defense in an effort to show inconsistent statements made by the former officer. Wanda Cooper Jones, Ahmaud Arbery's mother, saw the video showing the shooting of her son for the first time in court last Friday, and she said she hopes the video will show the jury that Arbery had not done anything wrong before he was killed. Obviously, this is a case I think is very important. A lot of people have already questioned whether, or nearly all white jury, 11 white jurors and one black juror, will do the right thing. We have to assume that the jurors are going to follow the law and listen attentively to the evidence, and that this is not a situation where somebody is going to walk simply because of their skin color. I don't see that happening. Jurors take their jobs very seriously, and I think that is what will take place here. All right, Letitia Stauch. She has finally entered a plea of not guilty in regards to the charges she murdered her 11-year-old stepson, Gannon Stauch, in January of 2020. Now, right after her attorney stated it is likely that they're going to introduce evidence about Stauch's mental condition after the disappearance of Gannon, the attorneys then clarified it is not a not guilty by reason of insanity plea. Well, the judge, Gregory Werner, set a trial date for March 28th of next year and expects the trial to last for 6 weeks, which seems excessively long for a case of this nature indeed. So I was a little skeptical of what was being written about this, and then I went straight to the court minute order, which is in fact public knowledge. And it says that on November 4th, it says defendant enters not guilty plea. DA expects 6 week trial, including jury selection. Jury set on March 28th, 2022 at 9 a.m. Pretrial, March 17th, 22. Motions on January 6th, 2022. Court advises parties that motions due not less than 15 days prior to the hearing. The defense raises defendant's mental health issue after defendant's child disappeared. Made it clear, not NGRI, mental health expert statements. The DA then piped in and says, DA Allen's statements on mental health expert writing report and requests copy. DA Allen statements on a recorded video evaluation. The defense requests court orders defendant's evaluation. DA requests defendant submit written offer of proof. Court denies. Court statements on eval at the Judicial Center versus Colorado Mental Health, which is Pueblo, which is where they evaluate people, and it takes months and months to get in there because they're so behind and they don't have many bed spaces due to COVID. DA then makes statements on this being defendant's waiver of privilege, defense statements on when Speedy runs, Tolini statements on Speedy not told. Court notes Speedy is running now, tolling for mental health issues to be addressed later. So what does that mean? It means it's a mess. Clearly, if the defense was going NGRI, the matter would be told and there'd be further evaluations. The defense is going to attempt to introduce mental health related issues from experts to go to basically a diminished capacity that perhaps they could not form the mental requisite intent. All right. It's a mess, but it looks like Letitia Stauch is going to be evaluated yet again, and it's unclear whether Speedy trial will be told. Now, that March of 2022 trial date, I wouldn't hold my breath on that one going on that particular date. We'll see what happens. It's going to be a mess. That case has been a mess from the beginning. We'll just have to wait and see. All right, next on the docket. Alex Murdoch, this guy is playing games. He is manipulative beyond compare. So Alex Murdoch signed papers earlier this week confessing a judgment of $477,000 sought against him by Johnny Parker, one of his former partners at Peters, Murdoch, Parker, Elsroth, and Dietrich, the law firm where he allegedly stole money. Now, confessing a judgment means the defendant is acknowledging the amount owed as a valid and enforceable debt and authorizing the Palmetto State's court system to enroll a judgment against him in that amount. Okay, why is that significant? Well, on Thursday, Murdoch also had confessed a judgment in a lawsuit filed by his brother, Randy Murdoch, for a $90,000 debt. Murdoch's confessions are likely to further stoke speculation that the 53-year-old lawyer is attempting to keep assets in the hands of his family and former law partners by prioritizing their ability to recover funds over other victims of the alleged financial crimes. So what does that really mean? Let's explain it. If somebody in this particular case sues Alex Murdoch, he says, fine, I confess judgment, go to the court, get your judgment, go record it, and guess what? You get first crack at any property that I have because your judgment is first in time. First in time, first in right, okay? That's all it means. So all these other cases that are still pending, there's no judgment there. So his brother, his law partners are going to get first crack at any money. We'll see if that plays out, but I just wanted to explain that there for you. It's kind of like if somebody sells their house to two people at the same time, not knowing it to either person, the one who goes and records that deed first at the clerk and recorder's office owns the property. The other one may, but they're second in line. So So the attorneys, John T. Lay and former U.S. Attorney Peter McCoy, they were also appointed by the circuit court, specifically Judge Daniel Hall, as Alex Murdoch's receiver. Now, in appointing Lay and McCoy as Murdoch's receiver, Hall granted them broad powers not only to lock up Alex and his son Buster's assets, but to sue for the recovery of those assets, which is known as clawing them back. And how do you claw back? Well, you claw back when there's preferential treatment, insiders, so to speak, or if you know a judgment is coming down the way, you know you're going to get sued, and you give away all your property to your spouse for $1 preferential transfer. That can be clawed back. So obviously these confessed judgments total $567,000 to his brother and former law partner. And so the Lay and McCoy asked Hall to issue an emergency order which would block the enforcement of this backdoor legal move. The two lawyers noted in their filings that their status as co-receivers in the Murdoch case gives them exclusive power and authority over Murdoch's assets and also allows them to manage all matters related in any way to those assets to the express exclusion of any other person. So allowing a court to execute either of the confessions would violate that authority, according to the receivers, and while at the same time denying them the opportunity to investigate such claims and their authenticity and, well, their validity. This could just be a way to say, hey, he owed me some money, get whatever I got, go take my bank accounts and put it away for you. So the receivers are going to have their work cut out for them. We will have to see how the court rules on that. But clearly, Murdoch and his people are still out there trying to play games and manipulate the system. All right, next, the Kyle Rittenhouse case. Now, for some people don't find this case very interesting. Okay. And maybe it's because it's divided on such political grounds, so to speak. But I'm telling you, this is my own humble opinion. This case is over. And let me explain why. So a witness at the Rittenhouse murder trial testified just yesterday that he confronted Rittenhouse with a gun of his own to try to stop the bloodshed and thought he was going to die as he was closed in on the teenager. Well, the witness, Gage Grosskreutz, ended up getting shot and seriously wounded in the arm by Rittenhouse. Well, Grosskreutz went into action that night in Kenosha after seeing Rittenhouse kill a man just a few feet away, and he thought the defendant was an active shooter, according to Grosskreutz's testimony. Asked what was going through his mind as he neared the 17-year-old Rittenhouse, he said he thought that he was going to die. Now, Grosskreutz had a gun in his hand and with his arms raised when Rittenhouse fired, shooting him in the bicep. A prosecutor asked Grosskreutz why he didn't shoot Rittenhouse. Grosskreutz responded, like I said, that's not the kind of person that I am. That's not why I was there. It's not who I am, and I'm definitely not somebody that I want to become. Well, earlier that night, Grosskreutz was recorded on his cell phone for a live stream when he heard gunshots a few blocks away. He heard people yelling for a medic, and he began running towards the sound of the gunshot. Now, the video played in court showed Grosskreutz coming upon Rittenhouse as Rittenhouse was running away. He asked him what he was doing and if someone was shot. Rittenhouse says, "I'm going to the police. I didn't do anything." At the time, Grosskreutz testified, he thought Rittenhouse said, "I'm working with the police." Now, Grosskreutz ran along with Rittenhouse for a few seconds while trying to talk to him, but then turned to go help whomever might have been shot. But then Grosskreutz turned back towards Rittenhouse because he heard people saying that Rittenhouse had shot someone. Grosskreutz said he had been to many protests to offer medical attention and that he was wearing a hat that night that said that he was a paramedic and carrying medical supplies in addition to a loaded pistol. Now, Grosskreutz said his permit to carry a concealed weapon had expired and he didn't have a valid permit on that particular night. Now, the good part came under cross-examination by a lawyer for Mr. Rittenhouse who asked Mr. Grosskreutz why he had falsely told police detectives shortly after shooting that his Glock pistol had fallen out of its holster that night, rather than saying that he had pulled it, as the videotape and photos obviously showed. Now, under questioning on cross-examination, he also acknowledged that he was carrying the gun concealed without a valid permit to do so, and that he had been denied a request from the police as early as September of 2020 to interview him about the shooting. Now, Mr. Grosskreutz described the seconds before Rittenhouse shot him. He was shown photos that captured him pointing his gun at Mr. Rittenhouse. Now, take a look at this video clip. This is some great cross-examination where the defense attorney says you were shot when you had your gun pointing at him and he was on his butt. Although Mr. Grosskreutz didn't want to admit it, ultimately on cross-examination, he admitted it. He admitted that he pointed his gun at Rittenhouse while Rittenhouse was on the ground and that Grosskreutz was coming at him.
I'll show you what has been marked as Exhibit 67. That's a photo of you, yes?
Yes.
Okay. That's Mr. Rittenhouse?
Correct.
Okay. Now, you'd agree your firearm is pointed at Mr. Rittenhouse, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And once your firearm is pointed at Mr. Rittenhouse, that's when he fires his gun. Yes?
No.
Sir, look, I don't want to... Does this look like right now your arm is being shot?
That looks like my bicep being vaporized, yes.
Okay. And it's being vaporized as you're pointing your gun directly at him. Yes?
Yes.
Okay, so... When you were standing 3 to 5 feet from him with your arms up in the air, he never fired, right?
Correct.
It wasn't until you pointed your gun at him, advanced on him, with your gun, now your hands down, pointed at him, that he fired, right?
Correct.
Ladies and gentlemen, case is over. You have to remember the other two individuals were also coming at Rittenhouse where he claims it was self-defense. Based upon this evidence, Rittenhouse is going to get self-defense and not even have to testify. Unbelievable. Great cross-examination. That's why we have trials. Now, do I think Rittenhouse is going to get off scot-free? No, he'll be found guilty of some type of carrying a weapon by a minor, something along those lines. But I don't think that he's going to be convicted of the murder charges in this particular case. And remember, Grosskreutz and the other two victims in this case are basically some Antifa guys out there protesting, burning down the city. It's not exactly favored conduct by these people that live there. And I don't think these people are going to have a whole lot of sympathy for the victims in this particular case. Now, this may sound cold. This may sound, oh my gosh, God, you don't care. Life isn't valid. No, I've told you before, I am a realist. And I'm telling you, these are the things that the defense and the prosecution have to consider. And the prosecution is doing a pretty weak case when it comes to prosecuting this case. The last time I've seen prosecutors this flat is basically when they prosecute police and they're like, oh, I'm so sad that I lost this case. I was prosecuting this police officer because he had done really bad things. They're just not into it, ladies and gentlemen. I think they know the victims are not that likable. Maybe that's the word I'm looking for. Maybe that's it. But the reality of it is they were protesting. They were burning down the city. I'm not saying Rittenhouse is right, but I'm saying he may be legally justified under the law. And I assure you, I did not originally think that when this first came about, this case came about. But now, as things have developed, and as you've seen the facts come out and we see more of them at trial, I think he's going to walk. We'll see if I'm right, but I don't think he's going to get off completely on everything. We'll have to wait and see. All right, next on the docket, the former toucher in chief, that's right, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. Well, his case has been put off until January at the request of the Albany County District Attorney, who said that there were some errors with the Sheriff's Department filing the complaint and they risk a procedural dismissal in the case. Now, the District Attorney said in a letter to the judge, Judge Holly Trexler has been investigating claims against Cuomo for months, and the Albany County Sheriff's Craig Apple announced the charges on October 29th, saying that the former governor accused of touching the breasts and buttocks of an aide in December was facing an overwhelming amount of evidence against him. But Apple filed the charges without consulting the victim, Brittany Commisso, or her attorney. Now, Apple didn't include a sworn statement from Commisso that the portion of the transcript of her interview used in the complaint did include a signed oath, and that it excluded other portions of her testimony, and that it misstates relevant law. Basically, what they're saying is that the sheriff didn't include all the proper and necessary paperwork to establish probable cause, and the district attorney wants additional time to fix it so that the case is not dismissed. And I won't say the word technicality, because, well, it's called due process of law. But they got to get it right. Otherwise, nothing happens. The case will be dismissed. So we'll see if the prosecutor truly goes forward. But you know, it's not going to be a warm and fuzzy holiday time for former Governor Andrew Cuomo because, well, he's still charged at this point where he's facing, obviously, a conviction, a misdemeanor conviction, but having to register as a sex offender as well. All right, our dumb criminal of the day. A pizza-eating suspect responsible for a pair of car break-ins was caught after deputies followed an unusual trail of evidence in Florida. Dewey J. Smith was arrested on Wednesday after being caught carrying victims' credit cards and IDs. And deputies responded to the break-in calls and noticed marinara sauce was on the inside handle of the driver's door. There was also an empty pizza box at the scene of another break-in. Neighbors reported Smith going through their garbage earlier that night and taking a Little Caesars pizza box. When Smith was caught walking on Twin Oaks Street with the victim's cards in his hands, he reportedly said, "You caught me red-handed."